next month.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
When our Seattle Seahawks land in London.
London, baby!
The Pedestrian Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast.
Coming live.
For the Seattle Touchdown!
We welcome on a host.
Can we get serious now?
A very cool and very exciting guest.
It's your time. It's your turn.
From a central London location, we present the Pedestrian Podcast.
It's painful enough doing this as it is.
The London Shows.
London, baby!
Okay, because that's not going to get annoying.
This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast
of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts.
Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
Yep, it's that time of the week again. We are back for another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I have to say, and this is not a bit, about 3 seconds ago, I just had like a knife-like pain in my stomach sitting down. Feels like it's very unpleasant. And actually, this is more pleasurable than anything I felt on Monday evening.
Yeah, I think your message at like 2 o'clock was, well, I'm having fun. And that was pretty much what it was like on Monday. The Seahawks, as we know, travelled to Chicago, to Chi-Town, to play Mitchell Trubisky and the Chicago Bears, and come away, as they did the week before in Denver, without a win and a lot of questions and doubts lingering over the team. 24-17, but before we get into individual players and the big talking points coming out of Monday night, 24-17 is doing a disservice to the Bears, and it was for 50 minutes game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for the defense, for keeping it 24, but when fumbled and they had the ball on, I guess, like the 40, yeah, we all said on our WhatsApp group at the time, if they score and make it 31-10 right now, that will be a much fairer reflection of the game than what it is at the minute. And obviously, we scored pretty much a garbage time touchdown. But yeah, I mean, a 7-point gap doesn't tell you half the story, in my opinion, of the game.
No, it was not pretty. I can't remember what point it was of the game, but in the second half for certain, the Seahawks only had 80 yards of total offense. We'll dive into the people who stood on the sidelines and in the boxes a little bit later, but we'll start, as we always do, at the quarterback. Russell Wilson, 22 for 36, 226 yards, 2 touchdowns, and his first pick six in 6 years. Yet again, he was sacked six times, accounting for 24 yards. But we spoke briefly late Monday that he just didn't look, something looks off with Russell Wilson, not just like physically or limping around, but his demeanour was a bit off and a bit strange on Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah, he doesn't look happy, and it wouldn't stun me if there was a disconnect already between him and Schottenheimer. The two, from an ideological point of view, seem to be completely different in their makeup of how they want the game to be played. And, you know, people have been saying, oh, Wilson was terrible. And, you know, we give Wilson quite a lot of crap for being a bit of an idiot and whatever. And sometimes his play can be slightly annoying. But you watched the All-22 today, so I think you might have a better idea of this than me. But how many open receivers or open passes did he miss on Monday? I mean, did he have any opportunities? Because as far as I'm concerned, the problems with the passing game were as much to do with scheme and coaching as they were him, and I actually felt a bit sorry for him.
Yeah, I mean, I only watched the first. I could only bear the first half of all 22 because it was not pretty. But as I said to you on WhatsApp, there's at least three times in the first three drives, the play that resulted in the pick six, which put the nail in the coffin on Monday night. That play appeared to have been called at least three times in the first three drives. I mean, that is just... I mean, we always heard about Bevel. I think Jason Whitman, whoever the commentator was on Monday, said about Matt Nagy always scripts 15 plays. That's something we heard with Darrell Bevel for 6-7 years. If Brian Schottenheim was doing 15 plays, like scripting them, and three of them are exactly the same, I mean, his sheet looks large. The typing, obviously, just like Bart Simpson on a blackboard, isn't it? Just repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again. I mean, these defenses are coached up by the best coaches in the profession. They're going to latch onto it as they did to the cost of the team. It just seemed really strange. But on the topic of open receivers, there's only a couple of occasions, but by then, the Khalil Mack or Eddie Goldman's in Russell's face. He can't really put too much blame on him. I know Samuel Gold over in the Athletic has gone through the six sacks earlier today, and he's only put one on Russell Wilson. Others just breakdowns in pass protection, as always. But
even the touchdown to Lockett, he's not open. It's just an incredibly good throw.
Yeah,
probably a bit of a push off.
Yeah,
a great catch and not great DB play who can probably turn his head around it and catch it. I mean, Wilson's had to make something out of literally nothing there.
Yeah,
but I mean, is that really a surprise when you have no actually great receiver? The game, I was thinking we don't have great height, we don't have great speed, and we don't have great hands. There's sort of the maximum we have at anything is good.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember if I put it earlier, but the sharpest looking receiver on Monday night was Brandon Marshall. I mean, his catch in the first, second drive, where he just completely Shaquille O'Neal's the defender off the ball. And any other receiver on this team, apart from probably Doug, is gonna be a pass breakup or worse. Because of his size, because of his experience, he just steps in front of the defender and just frames him out of it and takes the catch for the first down. He was the sharpest looking one, but as we saw on Sunday, the receiver doesn't have to be open. If you watch Tara Taylor's ridiculous throw to, is it Callaway?
Yeah.
I think. I mean, Callaway is like 10 yards behind the ball. He just speeds past the DB and comes down with it. You don't have to be open to throw. But it's again, this thing with Russell Wilson is, does he trust the guys he's thrown to? And without Doug Baldwin, it doesn't appear that he does when they are in that tight coverage. Although saying that, he did throw into like a postage stamp on for the Tyler Lockett one. But 22-36, 2-26. A lot of that was garbage time when the Bears kind of played prevent, as ever. Prevents you from doing is winning the game. It's closer, but again, his stats are padded a bit more than they probably should be. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, frame that? Well, two things. I mean, even Tyler Lockett, who people might be screaming, you know, at the radio or their phone, like, you know, what about Lockett? You're not talking about him because he's got two good touchdowns in 2 weeks. I kind of feel like the two touchdowns he scored, given that he's done literally nothing outside of those two catches, that's kind of what you have a third-round rookie receiver for. That's not the production I expect or need out of a $10 million receiver.
No.
I know that seems really harsh, but the whole point was that we both said that, you know, we probably wouldn't pay him that money. Like, I would imagine like Tyler Boyd at Cincinnati, that's kind of what I'd expect from him. Two catches for two touchdowns that are really good, but not a lot. He's not a dominant pass catcher by any means.
No.
But then in terms of the garbage time, I mean, I said that I was going for a drink in the fourth quarter, and I amassed more yards of kitchen and back than the Seahawks had built up in the whole of the game. And I wasn't far off. I mean, my kitchen's probably about maybe 8 yards away from where I sit, so 16 yards. I racked up 20% of the yards just getting a glass of water, because the Seahawks going into the fourth quarter were on 80 yards of total offense, and they amassed 1 yard in the third quarter. One!
Well, the Mitchell Trubisky threw, we'll go into defense later, but he threw two interceptions, and on the two subsequent drives, the Seahawks went a grand total of minus 8 yards on the two drives following the interception. I mean, we were in New York last year when they, was it a fumble of Eli Manning? And then I stood there, I sat there and said to you, just if I was playing Madden, you go for the kill shot. And we did with that ridiculous catch by Paul Richardson over Landon Collins where they wrestled each other to the ground. But that just wasn't given the opportunity, again, either by scheme or by receivers not getting open. It just, I mean, losing 8 yards on two drives is, that's pathetic, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, your offensive coordinator has three different plays he can call. So ultimately, it gets fairly predictable. So
yeah,
it did well to make minus eight, to be honest.
Yeah, it wasn't much fun. I mean, we'll probably talk about more about him as we go through the offense, but Brian Schottenheimer,
I imagine we will do.
A lot of people are already, I mean, a lot of people give up the second it was announced that he was the new OC. I mean, people moan for 4 or 5 years about Daryl Bevel, but Daryl Bevel had this team in a top 10, top 6, top 5 offense, and when all things were considered, this team is going to be lucky to be out in the top 31, isn't it, if this carries on like this?
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, the Bevel thing's interesting because a lot of people were doing that, the whole hire Bevel jokes, and to be honest, I wouldn't have got rid of Daryl Bevel, but I was okay with getting rid of Bevel, as I think you were, on the proviso that someone else was going to come in, you know, a Matt Nagy, a DeFilippo, someone like that who was a young offensive mind that could get stuff done. Schottenheimer only coaches terrible offenses and is just a puppet for Pete Carroll's awful ideas of what offense should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I listened to the Seahawkers guy who do a fantastic job, and they did a brilliant 30-minute or so recap of the game on Monday night with really raw emotion. I recommend you listening to it. And, you know, they talk about how, you know, want to get back to the run game, but also they're annoyed at playing 1993 style offense, but really running to the point where Schottenheimer wants to run, or typically said he wanted to run, you could argue that is 1993 offense. And if you look at the way that Shanahan and McVay, you know, the way they use the run as part of a complementary game, and even things like the way that Tyreek Cohen was used, and then that sets up like the little shovel pass to Trey Burton to score Chicago's touchdown. There's nothing like that in Seattle. There's absolutely no inventiveness. And even the runs that we do make are just inside, I formation, bollocks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we saw, a couple of years ago, we saw a lot of examples of a play come in a drive after a similar play went for nothing. Like, if you go back and watch the, I think it was against the Falcons, when they run Marshawn Lynch chucks it back to Wilson,
who then
launches it down. I think we even saw that in person when it was Mykhailo Lockett against the Panthers. But if you watch the game, Daryl Bevel was setting that up a quarter before with just a nothing play for 2 yards, when that's okay if you get nothing for 2 yards. If you use it like the Bears were with their shovel pass touchdown a little bit later on, but we're not, as you say, we just keep using the same play over and over and over and over and over again, and I think Jackson Bevins, I think it was Jackson who put on Twitter on late Monday, goes, the Seahawks are the worst team to watch in the NFL, and they are. I mean, the comparisons to the Browns are so hacky, but if you mean that they should have gone into New Orleans on Sunday and beat the Saints in New Orleans, which not many teams do, but they should have, because they had a quarterback who had a little bit more time than Russell Wilson was getting, but he had receivers who he seems to trust, especially, I mean, Antonio Callaway was almost out of the league before he was drafted because of all the stuff that happened at Florida with him, and he's catching 50-yard bombs. I mean, it is hacky, but you just watch 31 other teams and you think, why can't the Seahawks do that? We said it a lot last year when you watched Shanahan and who's the other one we always mentioned offensively? Was it Matt Nagy and the Chiefs?
Well, and we like McVay as well, obviously.
McVay. But you just watch that. It's a completely different sport. It's like bringing it back to soccer, I watch Coventry concede from a corner for the 15th time in 3 weeks, and you watch someone else you think it'd just be all universal. It's not, obviously it's a copycat league, but we're not copying anyone apart from towing the line for what Pete Carroll wants out of his offense, are we?
What do you think the point of it is? I mean, and do you think this is just a real stubbornness from Carroll, or that he's archaic, or that he is trying to prove a point to Russell Wilson, for example? Because I honestly can't get my head around any of it right now.
I think the best thing that happened to the Seahawks the last 10 years is Pete Carroll, but it's getting to the point now where the worst thing that's happening to the Seahawks is Pete Carroll, because he's so married to that all the mantras and all the win forever and all the other nonsense he trots out week after week and day after day, where you can't really... I mean, as you said about when they fired Bevel, you'd have been all right if we'd have brought in someone. It was a bit naive to think that, wasn't it? Because he was always going to bring in someone who can do his offense the way he wants to do it, as you said. And it was because he's so married to everything he's... That has worked for him in the past, yeah, but it's not working for him with this team and how they've built this team over the last few years, or completely disassembled this team over the last 6 or 7 months. So it is a stubbornness, but it's a stubbornness where you kind of go, okay, fair enough, it's got you to this point, but now it is time where you either adapt or perish, isn't it?
Well, it'll be interesting because obviously the week before the season we had that article pretty much heavily edited by Richard Sherman laying into Pete Carroll, let's be honest. And it was interesting that the majority of the fans really pulled ranks and, you know, got behind the coach and said, oh, you know, it's just bitter ex-players. But even this week I saw a couple of comments from people saying, well, you can see why the veterans were getting tired of the message, because I think the fans are getting tired of the message now. And it'll be interesting to see by the end of the season if that article or something of that iteration comes out again, what the reaction will be, because it wouldn't stun if it was slightly different and more on the side of the players, perhaps.
Yeah, I think you made a point, maybe on Twitter or Facebook, where the message is fine when you're winning, but when you... I think Steve Sandmayer said it as well on Twitter, where the Pete Carroll's message is all well and good when you're winning 70% of games, but when you start losing, and the start that the Seahawks have lost, really, I know it's pre-season, but 6 games this season already.
Well, 8 out of... we've lost 9 out of our last 10 games.
Yeah, when that starts happening, and when everything happens, no matter how you want to dress it up, with off the season, with who they let go for nothing and kept, much to the players' chagrin, it does kind of start to turn around on the coach, and I think we are starting to see that. And obviously, it does seem after 2 games very hot takey, but there does seem to be a groundswell there, didn't there?
Yeah, I mean, as fans, rightly or wrongly, we were basically told in the off season, this is the head coach. I mean, obviously, it's always the head coach's team, but we were basically told in the summer, like, this is Pete Carroll's team, and we are riding or dying with Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
And you have to accept it because that's where we are as a fan. But if it doesn't work out, then there's only one man you can point the finger of blame at. And we said this in January, and we said, you know, if he was to have gone with the rest of his coaches that got fired, we wouldn't have been gutted. But there's no place to hide for Pete Carroll now. And even if I would say the record is almost less important than the way in which the team goes about playing this year.
Yeah,
it's natural they make improvements. The team always start pretty poorly, but they look now like a team on offense, and that is really where the majority of changes have been made. Because everyone's healthy apart from Doug Baldwin right now, and that should be enough to be okay. But we look like a team that don't even practice.
No,
and they just turn up on Sunday and just draw me up in the dirt.
All that practice means absolutely nothing
yeah.
to how they play on Sundays, which it's not a bad segue to the running game. Rashad Penny finished the game, 10 carries for 30 yards. Chris Carson, 6 carries for 24. And I think he went and watched the Cubs for a second half, didn't he, Adam?
That was bizarre, wasn't it? But again, bizarre, like doubled down on bizarre, where Pete Carroll basically lying about why he wasn't playing.
Yeah, so
annoying.
If anyone has missed it, I don't think many people would have who were listening. Pete Carroll said immediately after the game that Chris Carson appeared gassed after his special team duties, which was a fair thing on first sight, because obviously the team was pretty thin with injuries. A lot of special teamers were not there. And then the snap counts come out, was it lunchtime Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Carson had the total of 2 snaps on special teams in 60 minutes, and then obviously that was rightly pretty well put by Brock and Sark on 710 ESPN to Pete Carroll, pretty much calling him out without calling him out, obviously, because they have they want to keep getting access. Yeah, and he kind of backed out, but kind of chased his tail a little bit. And it's another thing where, like, I think Mike Dugas said this a few weeks ago, and it started with more reference to Kaepernick and all that stuff. But I think I said, always compete is complete horse radish, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, two things. Firstly, special teams are obviously an important part, and it's something that I would say Pete Carroll maybe slightly overvalues in terms of when he talks about stuff. But let's say Chris Carson had played loads of snaps on special teams. You've got a punter who can whack it into next week, and you've got a returner who has no speed to return anyway. So even if it gets to a stage where you're so banged up that your star running back has to be on special teams, the order should be to fair catch every punt and hump every punt you kick out so that your star running back is just a body on there. Like, why would it be on there in the first place?
No, I don't. I mean, I might have to go back and look what he did in this few games. I'd imagine he was on it quite early this time last year, but I can't, like I said, I can't imagine. It just seemed like Pete Carroll didn't think people would go up and check, which is naive and a bit silly in 2018 where everything is fact checked. Everything. Absolutely everything. But yeah, but the running game, I mean, Rashad Penny had the longest of 10. He looked, he had a bit more in the tank this week than he did in Denver. But Chris Carson again finishes the game with 4 yards of carry, and again, back on the always compete, he's clearly the better option at running back, and this is going to be a running theme, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
that's nothing against Rashad Penny. It's his second NFL game, but Chris Carson is the number one back in the team right now.
Yeah, look, Rashad Penny doesn't look better than Mike Davis did last year, let's be honest. No. He's only playing because he's a first-round draft pick, and there is absolutely nothing. Like, I don't necessarily mind that, but let's be brutally honest in why he's playing. It's because he's the first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
And the team probably know there's a bit of heat on the fact they picked a running back in the first round, and they probably think they need to justify themselves with that. That, again, is also not a sensible way to run a team, but it wouldn't stun me if that was their mindset. But in addition to that, Carson obviously is right going at 4 yards a clip, but his first run was for about 8 or 9 yards. He's been good, Carson, without being exceptional. I don't hate the fact they tried to see what they had in Penny, but I mean, A, they should be using Carson as the primary guy because he probably is better, but I think people might be getting slightly high on how good he is, maybe.
Yeah, but 6 carries is not going to disprove that either, is it?
It should be way more than that, and there's obviously something that's gone on at halftime to mean he's not playing. And again, it's annoying because it's just more lies, and every team lies, but you can lie to a point where people will accept it, but when it's just so brazen like this, you're going to get pushback on it because it's just nonsense.
Yeah, it is complete and utter garbage. Receiver, we quickly have touched on with Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett has 2 touchdowns in 2 games, as you say, but the touchdowns, apart from the touchdowns, he has just 14 yards receiving yards in the 2 games, as he has a 54 and a 51 yard touchdown and 119 yards. My maths is off, I don't know.
It wasn't a 50 yard touchdown on Monday.
It was, that's what it says on here.
Really?
That's, one minute.
So we've got Seahawks.
Oh, no. Ignore me. I was wrong. Ignore me. Cut that part out. Moving on. No, didn't happen. Brandon Marshall, 6 targets, 4 catches, 44 yards. Jaron Brown, 3 catches for 36. He does not look the most fluid of wide receivers. CJ Procise, 3 receptions for 22 yards, Adam. And it appears, touching all the wood I can, he come out unscathed. I mean, we mentioned it, I think, last week, and you and Rob Statham both laughed in my general direction. But another way to, again, going back on doing different things in play calls, CJ Procise is a receiver, 3 catches and 3 targets. That's not a lot, just to give the defense something different to think about, is it?
Yeah, I mean, look at someone like Taylor Gabriel, who was a good third receiver in my favourite, probably ever offense that I've watched, which was Atlanta 2 years ago. That was my most, you know, the thing that excited me the most. And then even the way that he was used on Monday night, you know, there were a couple of screens, there were, you know, the odd dump off. He probably had, what, maybe four targets or whatever, but every play was positive because he's that kind of player. And I'd love to see Process used in that way if he can be healthy, but we're not modern enough to take advantage of it. As I said to you last week, CJ Process is the kind of player that Pete Carroll claims to love, but doesn't really ever want to use him in the way that he should be used to get the most out of him.
I mean the Percy Harvin comparisons can go on for quite a while. One of those receivers was Will Disley, 3 catches, 42 yards and the garbage time touchdown, which came with about 22 seconds left in the game. But he becomes the first, let me get this right, he becomes the first rookie tight end in NFL history to start his career with at least one touchdown and more than 40 yards receiving in back-to-back games. Again, he's one of the pleasant surprises of the game again, Adam.
Yeah, I thought he played well. Probably the best player we had on offense. I thought he chipped well, but unfortunately, Ifedi sort of negated all the value of the chip that he was making on Mac. He caught the ball very well, but I don't think they should override the idea that I think without Doug Baldwin, the Seahawks have comfortably the worst set of pass catchers in the league right now.
Yeah, I still float out there, Arizona, to be quite honest.
But I said David Johnson is as much of a pass catcher as
he's
not being used that this at the minute, to be fair. But I mean, okay, we have the second worst, so we're moving on up, maybe.
Yeah, as like I said, it's not the top 31 is not probably a bad target to aim for. Our offense, obviously, the big thing is always the airline. You just mentioned Jermaine Ifedi, who give up a sack and almost give up. He fumbled the ball, but it was recovered by Sweezy, I think, by Khalil Mack when he just took a running start at him. But as I said after watching all 22 earlier, he was not the worst airline on Sunday. J.R. Sweezy played in Seattle for 2 or 3 years, was meh, and then went to Tampa Bay and was pretty decent, and he's come back and he's a turnstile again. And on the other side, Ethan Posich was absolutely bullied by Eddie Goldman. And I've got a question for you, Adam. Did you know who Eddie Goldman was before 1 a.m. on Monday morning?
No.
So
I feel like he's a name that I've heard of, but
yeah.
No.
I mean, a lot of attention, almost to a scapegoat level, is being appointed to Ifedi. Some of it deserved, but the second half, Khalil Mack was very quiet. But it's all that attention to Ifedi is hiding the fact that the two guys at either guard spot are not doing much either, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, Ethan Posich for a second-round draft pick is rubbish.
And he's also apparently currently, as practice is going on as we speak, in a walking boot, which is another thing. After Justin Britt is apparently day to day with a shoulder injury after he tried to recover the second fumble from Russell Wilson late on in the game. But O-line is, I mean, without Justin Britt, just pray and hope, isn't it, without him and DeMarcus Lawrence rolling into town?
Yeah, I mean, because Postage obviously would be the natural idea for backup centre.
Yeah.
So I guess it'd be Joey Hunt playing centre.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And they've signed someone to the practice squad as well. Marcus something. Martin? That sounds right.
So what will it be? Odhiambo left guard?
No, Odhiambo's gone, didn't he?
It'll be
that guy they got off waivers, Justin Simmons, who was inactive on Monday.
That's handy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, do we have to watch?
Oh, poor Cedric and Terry, who are going out there. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, Mitchell Trubisky was kept to just 200 yards and threw 2 interceptions, both of them to Shaquille Griffin, who will get on in a bit. He was sacked twice on a loss of 15 yards. But the biggest thing for the defense is, as you say, how they kept the Seahawks in the game as much as they could when the starting defense was as follows: Quinton Jefferson, Jaron Reed, Naz Jones, Frank Clark, Barkevious Mingo, Austin Calitro, Shaquem Griffin, Justin Coleman, Akeem King, Bradley McDougal, and Earl Thomas. Now, someone put on Twitter, Seahawks have clearly just put in Sim free agency on for free for four straight off seasons on Madden career mode, which is that you end up with a defense like that with no KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner amongst others. But they, as we keep saying, they did all right, didn't they? Really, I mean, the two interceptions were a big bonus.
I thought they played proper Seahawk defense. They didn't give up really much at all in the run game. They turned the ball over, which was very impressive. They didn't really give up many explosive plays at all. The first drive, as you say, was a good bit of scripting by Matt Nagy, who, you know, just carved us up, and fair play to him for that. Sometimes the offense wins, which is fine. And then I think the second touchdown they scored was probably down to tiredness. I think we all said they look a bit knackered here, and a touchdown looked fairly inevitable, unfortunately. But in a way, that makes it all the more annoying that we've lost another one here. Well, two reasons. Firstly, the defense are well coached and played probably to their potential, and it's like, I feel sorry for those guys that they don't get a win out of it that they deserve. And the second thing is, I think in Case Keenum and Mitch Trubisky, we've probably played the two worst quarterbacks we're going to play all season, with depending on what happens with Arizona. And it worries me that we've given up both of those games, and we've probably played good prevent defense versus, you know, it's not been hugely aggressive in what we've done, and I just worry that a good quarterback could absolutely massacre us.
Yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes on the schedule. Who else is on the schedule?
Rodgers,
Case Keenum,
Kirk Cousins,
Kirk Cousins,
the Rivers, who always has his absolute Rivers, way with us.
Yep,
and then Sean McVay twice as well.
Yeah, and then also Shanahan twice as well. Because I mean, Matt Breida got 150 yards on Sunday, so he can do a lot. Frank Clark got his second sack of the season, but also Michael Kendricks got a sack. I don't think he should be here after all the stuff, the reasons they used to get rid of players in the summer. But Michael Kendricks on one day's practice showed some flashes, and he seemed awfully chippy, which is quite pleasant to see amongst all the mess on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to look at exclusively his play, he played like a leader that you would expect at linebacker. And he played like a guy who just won a Super Bowl. The puns were all very good, about how he blew up insides and stuff like that. And the only thing is that he had a hole in his hands for their first touchdown on Jordan Howard, because I think he could have picked it and maybe even taken it back to the house if he'd caught it.
Yeah, I think taking Matt out would have been hard with how his body was, but yeah, he should have, the more you watch that, he really should have caught that. But the star on defence was probably number 26, and that boy, that first interception looked familiar, didn't it?
It was fantastic. The way he played the sideline was literally like every YouTube video of Richard Sherman you ever watched. And it was awesome, the way he turned his head around, really elongated to make the play. It was beautiful. I loved it.
Yeah, it was so, so cool. And also, shout out to Tedrick Thompson, who lit up the receiver as well, just to give Griffin a chance to get up and try for some sort of return. But defense was better, but also they were down another man after the team decided to waive release Tom Johnson, is that right? Subsequently to make room for Shalom Luani, who then played zero snaps on defense or in the game at all, and now Tom Johnson,
whilst wearing number 24 by the way, which I'm not happy about at all,
the first active player to wear 24 since Marshawn Lynch left. And then Tom Johnson yesterday signed back with the Vikings, so they've got, was it 35 snaps for $2 million, which is another thing where the front office and this roster, how they're building this roster or putting this roster together, is being questioned. And before we get onto that though, Michael Dixon, a drop kick kickoff, and I don't think I've ever been more excited for an onside kick as I was on Monday, and absolutely nothing come from it. But another thing with Michael Dixon, his first punt, he pinned on back on the two, he had a 10 yard punt, which obviously people, I think John Maxfield on the group when we posted the questions was worried about his how that would affect his average. His average is still 51 yards, Adam.
After which, a 10 yard, having done after, the maths, is good.
Yeah, after he's punting half the field after one of his punts went for yardage as Brian Schottenheimer can't scheme for. And also, for the second straight week, he did punt for more yards than the offense got in total, 316 to 276. I think it was you put on Twitter, where Michael Dixon, being our best player, is slowly going to turn into from a joke to an actual real thing that is happening.
Well, he's 100% been the team MVP of the first 2 weeks, which is just sickening when he's a punter. No, there's no disrespect to the guy, but he's a punter.
Yeah. But he is good, though.
he's superb.
Yeah, I mean, the dropkick kickoff, I mean, hang time and pinning them back on inside, does it a 10 on a kickoff is ludicrous.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got a 15-yard penalty, didn't they, which put it further forward to allow him to do that. But you should. Why would you give the opposition 25 free yards?
Exactly. Like,
that's the perfect thing to do in that position.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. We did just mention how this roster's being put together. Tom Johnson's just the latest thing just to show where they're missing the mark quite handsomely on some occasions. I said to you yesterday on our messages that I kind of want to see John Schneider stick around after Pete Carroll's gone. I think Pete Carroll has said every time the contract negotiations have come up that Schneider will be here long after he's gone. How much of the blame should he take for the makeup of this roster? And would you be okay seeing him build a team again outside of Pete Carroll's shadow?
I think he deserves one more chance. I think the team are trying to build a roster around Pete Carroll's ethos, and I don't think that ethos is good for is going to work in the league anymore. And bear in mind, I'm not knee jerking here. We both said this in the middle of last season.
We've
been calling him Pete Wenger for a while now, to be honest. And I would love to see Schneider have the opportunity to build a team with, you know, Russell Wilson and an offense and a dynamic young head coach. I'd love to see that. So I don't know. I would do it. And so I guess we just have to see how that manifests itself. Again, I think it's going to be a hard decision to ever sack Pete Carroll because of how much of an inspiration he's been to the franchise. That could be the hardest part.
Yeah, because he bought the best, 4-year run this team has probably ever seen in franchise history, but also it's
will see again.
Yeah, it's probably likely than not that kind of sheer domination, which is what it was, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But then the things like the play of the quarterback are going to come into. I mean, Colin Cowherd is a complete blowhard, but when he starts making good points about this team, that's when you know you're on the decline, because he did on his terrible show on Fox Sports, which like 4 people watch. But he did make a good point. I feel ill saying that, but he did. One to praise on offense quickly.
One to praise on offense. I gave someone, didn't I, just now?
Disney. I think I'll probably go with that. Can't think of anyone else.
There's a reason for that.
Defense.
There's no one.
Yeah, defense.
Defense. Hard not to say Shaq Griffin, isn't it?
Yeah. Austin Kliethoe was bullied by off the ball a few times by Carl Long, which got some attention, but he led the team with 6 tackles. No, he didn't. He had 6 tackles. I think, because I can't give it to Shaquille Griffin, can't give it the same player twice. I'm going to give it to McDougal, who just continues to just look like a pretty good player for this defense, but also, as I said last week, he's been asked to do things which Cam Chancellor was not often asked to do, especially in the last couple of years of his career here. So I think McDougal has been, after Shaq Griffin, probably the best defensive player through 2 games.
I mean, it's not going to be anyone on that defensive line, because they are practically non-existent.
Well, in the pass, but the run defense is pretty good. I think, I mean, they held Jordan Howard to 2.5 yards a carry, which is not bad when Jordan Howard is probably a top 10 running back in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think of names to back it up, but I'm going to stick
to
it
a
out cowboy, there.
Stick to your guns.
Yeah. Thanks for comparing me to him. moving on. Seahawks have their home opener for the 2018 season this weekend as Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, and Jerry Jones roll into town on the Dallas Cowboys.
Prescott comes off and throws high, picked, and walking to the end zone is Coleman, Seattle on top. And the Salvation Army kettle goes Justin Coleman.
Yeah, so the Dallas Cowboys are next on the docket. They are 1-1. Oh, imagine that, Adam. 1-1 after losing on the road in the opener to Carolina Panthers 16-8, and then beating the hapless New York Giants, who actually, that might be a worse offense. That is definitely a worse O-line than the Seahawks. That is garbage. Poor, what are they doing in that quarterback position in New York? They beat them 20-13 with a very welcome, for me in fantasy, garbage time touchdown for the Giants to Evan Engram on Sunday night. But this is Dak and Zeke's team now, with Dez Bryant sitting on the sidelines for everyone.
Yeah, and probably good luck to them. I think it will eventually reap rewards if they could find a wide receiver, but they probably are a wide receiver short of really being contenders. They're sixth in overall defense right now in the league, which is a surprise. You don't typically
and you know who's calling their plays, don't you?
I do, Chris Richard, indeed. Yeah. But you don't typically think that Dallas are going to be good defense, but they end up being sneakily decent. You've got Sean Lee there, who didn't practice today with a hamstring injury, but he's obviously a good player. You've got Van Der Esch, who was a great draft pick, I think. The one thing they're missing is just in the safety.
Yeah.
Some point this season, Earl Thomas will be traded to the Cowboys.
Byron Jones kind of floats around that defense. They've got Chidobe Awuzie, who was really good when he's back in Colorado in the Pac-12. And they'll see another linebacker who's somewhat of an unheralded story, Jalen Smith, whose knee completely disintegrated in his final college game. He's now in his third year, and he's got a sack and 10 tackles through just two games. So it is a pretty, it's an unheralded or underrated defense the Cowboys are going up against the Seahawks offense. It's going to be, the big name, really. Sean Lee's probably number two behind him, but DeMarcus Lawrence against Jermaine Ifedi or whoever plays right tackle on Sunday. that's going to be the biggest focus going in for fans and pundits alike, isn't it? How that matchup fares for this game.
Yeah, that is going to be an enormously unfun thing to watch. Lawrence, for me, is probably second only to Clowney in that type of player. Not that he's the best, pass rusher, but the way in which he plays, just with the size and overwhelms his opponent. It's not like, we had Mack and Von Miller, who do it with real, not that Lawrence doesn't have this, but the way they do it with the guile and the different techniques. Lawrence and Clowney just bosh, get out of my way and get me to the quarterback, I'm going to eat him. And that slightly terrifies me, I'm not going to lie.
Yes, it's not very comforting. But in the second year, you said it's a bit of a question mark. Chidobe Awuzie looks like a pretty good slot guy. But they're just going to have to win more, as we said about the Chicago game. They're just going to do that more consistently. Although it does look like there could be a slight chance Doug Baldwin is out there on Sunday, but that just seems like it'd be hazard pay at that point, doesn't it, with Doug?
To what end is Doug Baldwin going to play? Like, who are you really benefiting by doing that? If he was to play and then get injured for 4 more weeks, doesn't really do anyone much good at all, does it? I wouldn't be playing him, to be honest.
No, or me. For our defense, though, Dak is, obviously we see with what the Rams are doing, with how they've built their team up around, in spite of Jared Goff, let's say. But they're trying to make the most of that quarterback window. The Cowboys have completely wasted theirs. I mean, Dak Prescott was a fifth round pick. Yeah. And they just, as you say, they've got, their wide receivers are Cole Beasley, Tavon Austin, Terrence Williams, Alan Hearns, and someone called Deontay Thompson. So, that's, on name value, that's not great, but they seem to get things done. I mean, he's only threw one touchdown through two games, and that was a long one to Tavon on Sunday. But there's like we said about groundswell under Pete Carroll, there's going to be a groundswell on Dak Prescott if he doesn't get them playing in January, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is a year that Prescott really needs to step up. I don't think he was dealt the finest of hands last year. Dez was obviously a bit of an issue, and he strikes me as the kind of guy that's probably a bit annoying to play with if not getting the ball and is not happy with you. But I think he's a very talented player, and I like the way he carries himself on the field. He strikes me as a real leader of a player, and he's not going to miss the throws that Trubisky missed, and that's the worry, because if they're open, I think Dak will find them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And then obviously the other guy, the big day for that offense, is Ezekiel Elliott. He's got just under 150 yards and two touchdowns at 4.6 yards a clip through two games. I mean, we just praised the run defense against Jordan Howard. Zeke Elliott is possibly on the tier above Jordan Howard, isn't he?
Yeah, man, I used to look forward to games like this in the olden days when, you know, let's say the Mebane days for the sake of argument, when, you know, a great running back would come in and we would just swallow him up.
Yeah.
This one worries me slightly. Zeke probably hasn't really jumped off the page just yet this season, and I think he's probably due. And if that offensive line, which is banged up but still pretty good, if they can get a good push and, you know, damage our interior, it could be a real worry.
Yeah, I just noticed that the Cowboys don't have a 100-yard receiver on the season yet, which is strange. I know we only have Disley, but that just seems like a strange thing. It seems like they've been purring a bit more. Yeah, I think Zeke Elliott is going to cause problems. I mean, Bobby Wagner's back practicing today. Confidence from Pete Carroll seems relatively high for Bobby, but we saw what Bobby Wagner at half speed looked like at the back end of last year. It wasn't great. You can't really have that against someone like Zeke, can you?
No, you'd run straight at Wagner time after time after time if he wasn't healthy, to be honest, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It's not going to be pretty, I don't think. As you can probably tell, I'm not the most confident. I go to Arizona next week and I'm fully expecting 0-3 v 0-3. Confidence higher for you this week, Adam, or is it just...
I don't know what to say about this one. I think it's a real, real pick 'em. I think Seahawks might win it by 2 points. But there's no confidence in that prediction. I just think Seahawks by 2, given the fact they're the home team, which gives you a 3-point boost on the spreads. Maybe Seahawks by 2 for no reason, really.
On our pick'em, it is the one game I've kind of left blank for a couple of days just to see what happens on Friday, because that injury report on Saturday for the Bears game was petrifying. If it's anything like that on Friday, then yeah, there'll be a tick going in the Cowboys column.
If Bobby is full go for the whole week, then I think we will win. If he's not, I think we'll lose.
Yep. Right. So what else? I think that's pretty much everything with this game. But it's like we said that we're not being hot takey or knee jerk after 2 weeks with all the Pete Carroll stuff. But there's going to be a measured response to this if they do win, isn't there? Because this team is not good, and you'll say a lot more about the Cowboys than it does us, really, wouldn't it? Because they're coming cross country. As we've seen, we're not very good at doing that, so they probably might not be. If they win, obviously you enjoy the win, but there's got to be a bit of realism to enjoying that. Is that fair?
If we lose, it's going to be the biggest meltdown of all time.
Oh, it's going to be incredible.
Social media is going to be the only place to be.
Yeah, it's going. That's kind of the thing. It's
like when Jackie Moon fought that bear. You're going to want to go into your mother's purse, reach in, get $40 and get in the building, because it is going to be a sight to behold.
That is one thing I've never seen, is when you dress up like Jackie Moon. I do kind of want to see.
I'll have to show you the pictures. My spirit animal, Jackie Moon.
It is going to be something to see. But score prediction?
24-22 Seattle.
I like how you kept to the 2 point. I think I'm going to go, I'm going to say numbers in order and hope it's right. 27-23.
Dallas.
The Dallas Seahawks. I think the Cowboys will win. I think ZK will be too much. I think Tavon Austin will do what he did when he was being coached by Jeff Fisher. I think he'll cause us too many problems. I think the Seahawks will be 0-3 heading to the desert. Moving on, it's time for Get in the Bin. This could be a long one.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, so Get in the Bin, Adam. I think this week, because of what's happened recently and over the weekend, I think we could put probably more than one in this week. But who's your first person?
Well, should we just assume that Schottenheimer has taken up residence along with Hugh and then just move on from there?
So Schottenheimer's in there until he's not in Seattle any longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone else?
Anyone else? I was having a think of someone and I couldn't. Oh, who was I thinking? You do yours and I'll come back to me and I'll remember who I was putting in there.
Well, I'm going to put Vontae Davis in there. the Buffett former Colt, Vernon's brother. I can't remember what the score was. It was not good for the Buffalo Bills in the first half on Sunday, and he decided that was the time he was going to retire, and just left Buffalo Bills, just left the stadium at halftime. Lorenzo Alexander had this to say after the game about his then former teammate. So yeah, I mean, Vontae Davis did release a statement where all the reasons, I can't remember who tweeted it, yes, these reasons are fair, but they'd have been a lot fairer, a lot more understandable if you'd have waited 3 hours. I mean, what is that? I mean, I can't remember any evidence of that happening before. I mean, I'm a Coventry City fan, the first away game I ever went to, we lost 5-1 at QPR, and our manager quit at the full-time whistle. That's the thing that jumped out, but is there any other example of this happening before? It's just complete bananas, isn't it?
It's unbelievable behavior. To be fair.
It's just incredible. Another one I want to put in is the NFL, or whoever decides on halftime shows for the Super Bowl. According to Variety, Maroon 5 are going to be the halftime band at this year's Super Bowl in Atlanta. Now, Google Atlanta music and try and find where Maroon 5 come in that list. I mean, I get it's got to be advertiser-friendly and all that. They don't want another Janet Jackson thing. But when Donald Glover is a person that exists and has a TV show about his hometown, Atlanta, that's who you go with. I know his songs aren't exactly PG and all that. But imagine Donald Trump sitting at the Super Bowl and Donald Glover starts This Is America. I mean, that would just be the greatest thing ever. And it's just a complete missed opportunity. You could get anyone from Outkast. You could get Ludacris and all these cronies to pop up again. You could get anyone. But Maroon 5, I mean, come on. Get in the bin with that, man. Adam?
I love a bit of Maroon 5.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, probably should. But I like, you've got to love a bit of Maroon 5.
Nah.
Oh, well. Oh, I know who I was going to put in the bin. And you might disagree with me on this based on the Blair Walsh stuff from last year, but I think Mike Zimmer can get in the bin.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Little bit, everyone look at me with his press conference. I thought that wasn't the way. If I was a player and I saw the way that the coach threw me under the bus so quickly, when, you know, there are so many different reasons that a team can lose, and I know this is hypocritical because we skewered Blair Walsh after miss, you know, 3, 4, and 5 last year, but we did give them a chance, but we always knew this was going to happen. I thought the way Zimmer approached that press conference about his kicker and release was very, very tasteless, to be honest.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look. And as I think Ariel Foss pointed out, that that they had the ball inside the 20 and 2 minute wall and didn't even try to score a touchdown, which would have made a lot more sense after you've diced that defense to get in the back in the game anyway. So yeah, it's just not a great look, but I'd imagine it probably comes with the territory with Mike Zimmer a little bit, win at any cost. And but as you keep saying, we saw with Daniel Carson in Minnesota and Zane Gonzalez, I think it was, for the Browns. I mean, the mental frailties of kickers is the most exposed, most common exposed in it of all NFL positions.
Yeah, and then Seabass goes and knocked one from 56 yards, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. 56-yard field goal for Sebastian Jankowski on Monday was the longest Seahawks field goal in nearly 4 years. Obviously, Blair Walsh was absolute. Enter swear word here.
He was actual what you put in the bin.
Yeah, from anything over 44 yards last year, and the year before
centimeters.
Yeah, and the year before, Hauschka didn't make one from over 50. I think his longest was, I think his longest in 2016 was 53. So it's the longest one of over 55 yards in 4 years. I mean, Jankowski got some pouters for missing two consecutively after Mulligan in Denver, but that could be a good thing going forward. If there is anything good thing for the Seahawks, is a kicker being able to, I mean, he didn't just nail it, it would have made it by 60 and it was dead straight as well.
Yeah, if he's got the mindset that he's going to make it, that is what I think is the most important thing. I was all for that.
Yeah, anything other NFL caught your eye over the weekend? Obviously, there's a lot of interesting things going on in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was thinking the potential implosion of the Steelers does seem pretty interesting. And surely we're going to see Josh Rosen this weekend in Arizona.
I'd imagine so. I would quite like to see how he does next week as well, in person. They didn't go past halfway until the 2 minute warning at all on Sunday?
I think they had one play in the Rams half all game.
It's absolutely terrible. Also with the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger has been named in Stormy Daniels' new book to do with Donald Trump. After Donald Trump, apparently, after his encounter with the porn star, asked the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback to take care of Stormy Daniels. I mean, that is the weirdest random collection of names in since the Seahawks defensive line on Monday, isn't it?
Just an incredible story. It really is unbelievable.
Apparently it's been out there since January. I mean, how has that escaped everyone's attention? I mean, I didn't see it till yesterday.
Is all I can say about it.
Yeah, and obviously the other thing was that Antonio Brown decided to take a day off, which his agent said wasn't a day off. The team knew about it, but it didn't seem like Mike Tomlin did know about it, did it?
No, he didn't seem best pleased.
No.
Mike Tomlin is not the kind of guy I want to piss off, to be honest.
No, those eyes are kind of like, it's like he's in the sunken place.
Yeah, they're intense.
Yeah. What's the other thing? Other NFL, talking to Steelers, Patrick Mahomes.
You're in love, aren't you?
He's been my guy for a couple of years, but that is some performance. 10 touchdowns, the most ever through two games in NFL history. A lot of people say Andy Reid's the perfect coach for him, but again, it's just a bit annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that when the Wilson contract negotiations come round, this could be the kind of thing that maybe plays on their mind if they see someone like Mahomes, who, you know, obviously isn't playing under an expensive contract at all. And I'm not saying don't pay Russell Wilson here, but it will come. If the next Mahomes was there when we picked, and you could potentially rebuild the whole team, it's something that I expect that would be given consideration.
It also seemed that the Seahawks had him circled last year. I think Snyder hinted that he was the surprise of the first round. They didn't expect the Chiefs to jump up from 27 to about 13, I think they jumped up to take him ahead of the Cardinals, which is hilarious. So they have dabbled with the top end of the quarterbacks. I know people read a lot into it over this drafting, but they do seem to be at least paying attention, which is obviously as all scout teams and all that should do. But it could be something to watch as it goes forward. But yeah, he is clearly the early frontrunner for NFL Rookie of the Year, and everything he's turned the Chiefs with Tariq Hill and Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt into something of an offensive juggernaut. I think I read somewhere before Sunday a team who scored 37 points at home had not lost in like 1,000 games or something.
With zero turnovers.
Yeah, and the Steelers did that because of the Texas Tech quarterback also on Sunday. Adam, do you know what happened on Sunday? Which was the 1,041st time it happened?
I do. It's my favourite thing. A scoring army.
It did. At Lambeau Field, it was the first ever 29-29 scoreline in
NFL. Speaking of which, NFL, get in the bin. No one likes ties. Get them humped. No one wants them. It doesn't benefit anyone. Just please go to a college overtime system.
Yeah.
It's just so much better. It ruins our picks league, let's be honest. I'm going to win it anyway, but it still ruins it. No, ties are just annoying.
Yeah, they are. I mean, when Daniel Carlson missed a field goal, obviously Lambeau Field went into raptures, and there's that brilliant shot of Rodgers who looks like he's just lost by about 15 points. No one likes it, especially. But this could be the thing that kind of maybe changes them. Obviously, two in the first 2 weeks, it's going to pay absolute chaos to playoff projections at the back end of the season. Obviously, we're not going to be involved with that, but yeah. No, just put the ball on the 20 or 25 yard line. Even if you have to rotate end zones or something, like, just so you have to be different from the college. But it's the one thing. There's a couple of things college get right. They also get the defensive pass interference penalties right as well. But it's one thing that the college game does get right, and they need to follow suit because it is just. I mean, also 10 minutes. That's not much time. I know that all player safety, but I mean, really? It's just absolute nonsense. Moving on quickly to the college game. The Huskies. Yeah, Myles Gaskin, he's probably my favourite Husky on that team, Adam.
Yeah, it was great to watch. It's a great result. Jake Brown did his best to throw another insane pick, which somehow they didn't score from.
I think they had four possessions in the second half with inside the 22. Incredible. As the Huskies, and didn't get a single point from it, but that defense is quite a show as well. Anything else from college catch your attention, or did you just kind of?
I have to add a very busy weekend of work, and apart from checking in with the Huskies score, I didn't catch up on too much college football this weekend.
No, but there is one thing on college that we commented on because it was shown during halftime on Monday. Urban Meyer, what a. Maybe he should get back in the bin and might put him in a few weeks ago.
The bin I like is a jovial thing. Urban Meyer, this is pretty dark. For anyone that didn't see on ESPN in the halftime show, they were teasing an interview with Urban Meyer to come later on, and he was talking about not seeing the pictures a week ago and then not seeing the pictures until 3 weeks ago of the domestic abuse. And I found it all very dark, and it was the classic example of, it was sort of like Michael Kendricks on speed, in the sense that as long as you're winning, then the guy can stick around. And I found it all very, very difficult to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, I don't know who the interviewer was, but his complete
just silence,
exasperation at everything he was saying. I mean, Urban Meyer then on Tuesday released a statement, which, as someone put it, was his statement apologising for his half statement, which apologised for his statement, which was came after his first apology statement. I mean, if anyone's mishandled it, but it's just, the NCAA are just spineless, and they have done absolutely, the 3-game ban is just, at the start of the season for Ohio State when they're playing out of conference games, I'm so disappointed when TCU didn't hold on against them on Saturday night. To finish up this week, week three of the NFL season, to end 2018 season, lock and shock. Adam, lock of the week for you.
Well, we do a killer competition, and I'm currently on a process of picking anyone that plays the Bills. And I am, as a result, going for the Minnesota Vikings, who host Buffalo this weekend, as my lock of the week.
I think I've done that the first 3 weeks as well. Let's just check my first week one. No, it's the Rams. Who did the Rams play in week one? Oh, ooh. Oakland. No,
Rams
Oakland. Well, they're my killer pick of the week, so I can't have them. My lock of the week outside of that is the... Jesus. That's a bastard of the week. I'm going to go with the Patriots to beat the Lions, because that defense doesn't look up to much, and Bill Belichick is going to know every trick Matt Patricia calls on, even though the Lions are at home. So I think they're my lock. Shock of the week, Adam?
I'm not sure what constitutes a shock, you know, this early in the year, because it is so early, but I was wondering if... no, that's not going to be a shock. What's going to be a shock? Would the Panthers beating the Bengals at home be a shock, given it's 2-0 versus 1-1?
Yeah, I'd imagine. I can't even see that game.
It's 1 o'clock kickoff. The only other way I could think about was that maybe the Redskins get done against the Packers, but I'm not that confident on that. So I think I'm going to go with... Yeah, I'm going to go with the Panthers being a... It's a cheap one, but I'm going to go with that as a shock of the week, given it's... 2-0 against 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go with again, I know they're unbeaten, but the Buccaneers, as they stood at the start of the season, I think I'm going to be the Buccaneers are going to be 3-0 come Tuesday morning, and them to beat the Steelers, because as we mentioned earlier, they are in a right mess.
I like that. That'd be a good shock.
Yeah, that'd be, I mean, whatever the opposite of putting someone in the bin, can we put Ryan Fitzpatrick in like a glass case? I mean, no one's seen it. Everyone probably should have by now. He took possession of DeSean Jackson's gear for his post-game presser and was then asked what of it was his, and he said just the chest hair. I mean, he is chucking that ball around, but he was good value when he was a guest star in the league a few years ago. He is really putting the pressure on Jameis, who's going to have a very tough time getting not just his job back, but the players in that locker room back, because it just seems they're all coming round. I mean, 4 touchdowns in back-to-back games for any quarterback is good, but when it's Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it's quite something, isn't it?
Maybe Jameis can eat his hand again, and that'll win the team back around.
So, someone spotted that DeSean Jackson's face during that, and it is amazing. if someone screen grabbed it somewhere on Twitter or Facebook, it is brilliant. I do think the Buccaneers could set the cat amongst the pigeons, because I mean the Dolphins as well seem to be. I mean, Florida could have a pretty fun few months here, couldn't they? Dolphins, Jags, Buccaneers. It's not bad.
How many of those are making the playoffs?
What?
How many of those three?
The AFC is terrible.
Yeah.
I kind of want to say three.
Really?
Yeah. I think the Dolphins will be fifth or sixth.
Okay.
Because I think the Alabama rookie is just ridiculous. I think he's really, and Tannehill looks good, and the running game's just doing enough. And yeah, I think they'll be a tough out at home, especially. The Jags, that's a ridiculous... Yeah, that's done. And I do think the Buccaneers, the Falcons, aren't all there on offense yet. I mean, they've got Steve Sarkisian, so they are a bit Schottenheimered there a bit. But and the Saints' defense seems to be reverting back to type. The Panthers, Cam Newton doesn't seem to be getting that offense going too much at the minute. Yeah, I think obviously the Buccaneers are the long shot, but I think the Buccaneers will be a top 8 seed in the NFC. It's just if they have the tiebreakers, and I mean, starting off 2-0 is not a bad way to go about it. So I'm going to go with 3. What about you?
I'm going to go 1.
Ooh.
I think the NFC is too stacked, and I don't think they're going to win the division. I think they're too stacked for the Buccaneers to get it. And Dolphins wise, I think you're going to have.
But the AFC is truly horrendous.
Yeah, but I think the Steelers and Bengals will get in. I think the Chargers and Chiefs will definitely get in. Yeah. And I think you have the two other winners of the conferences will have the Patriots as the winner. And then I'm missing South. South. I think obviously the Jaguars are going to win that. So I think that they might be unlucky and miss out because of that.
Yeah, that'll be something to come back and see. But I do think the Dolphins look really good. I mean, I can't. Is it Fitzpatrick? That's his name, isn't it? Minka Fitzpatrick, yeah. That's the name. He looks really good on that defense. Anything else you want to looking forward to this week in the NFL, Adam? Or college? Anything else?
No, I think we chopped it all up. I'm going to. It's my first proper opportunity to watch Red Zone on Sunday because I've been working the last two Sundays. So I'm going to put proper time into that. I want to see how maybe Vita Vea gets on as well. I'm looking forward to seeing him play a little bit for the Buccaneers. Well, that's actually on Monday, isn't it, against the Steelers? Yeah, so that could be certainly a condensed watch the next morning. That should be good. and I just hope the Seahawks aren't shit.
Yeah, it's not a lot. Well, you wouldn't think it'd be a lot to ask, but. So obviously in a few weeks we are going to be down in London. The date is decided. Who we're getting on is not just yet. As you heard last week, Rob Staten will be stopping by. We are hoping that Mike Dugar will be again, depending on the team schedule. We have sent the list to the team and it's still awaiting confirmation on names. If obviously all the Saturday night event is sold out and no more tickets will be going on sale. There is numerous events going on around London from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, pretty much onwards. And obviously in the game, everyone, Seahawks, probably everyone going to the game will be heading to the Green Man. So if, head there, you may get the chance to hear our voices in real life, which is not as is even worse, really, isn't it, Adam?
I mean, two faces for podcasts, let alone public displays. But so let's see how we get on.
Yeah, but obviously there is a team designated pub, which I think is out there. But the team will be announcing all that stuff in the next few days on all their different channels. So keep an eye on that. If you want to keep an eye on what us UK Seahawks are doing, you can do it on Twitter at Seahawks UK, on Facebook UK Seattle Seahawks fans. The podcast and the chapter is on Instagram at UK Seahawks. Ourselves actually on support at this, year, this has been the podcast. We do have one quote
a lot further than I was last year.
Finish off this
I'm glad
week.
I'm finally this has been the podcast. I feel like that's the main thing I want to work on, and it's just a huge confidence booster for me to finally start getting the ball in my hands early in the season. That's something I'm going to continue to work on. I know I still had a few, mistakes here and there, no missed tackles. So it's stuff I still have to work on. But, I'm glad I'm making progress, and I'm glad I'm finally getting the ball in my hand. And, just doing the things correctly and doing it right, and so I can help out a lot more.